Welcome to Green and Gold Forever. I'm Eric Drews, broadcasting from Appleton, Wisconsin, joined shortly here once again by Chris Zarnik to talk about the Green Bay Packers taking on the Atlanta Falcons in the NFC This was a different game. They did not play in the NFC Championship, although it looked like they just replayed the game.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, that's right. Exactly. They took it off tape and they just played it again.
That's what it seemed like. And kudos to Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth for feigning enthusiasm over this old game. But in actuality, Green Bay once again goes down to Atlanta, this time a different stadium, but the same result, losing 34-23, and it really wasn't that close. And now it's been three times in a row that they've gone down into Atlanta, defensively been smoked, offensively the first time they put up a fight back in October, back in January, and then yesterday the offense even struggled. And it felt yesterday like one of those 90s divisional round playoff games against the Dallas Cowboys where really early on in the game, you just felt like, I know injuries, we'll get into that, but you just felt like they didn't have a chance.
Well, right. You know, if you've been around long enough to remember the number of times we lost to the Cowboys in the 90s, you could just tell in the first two series, you know, their first offensive series and our first offensive series, you know, whether it was scheme, whether it was people, you're just playing at a different level. And last night, I'll tell you, as a Packer fan, I'm super frustrated. I'm incredibly frustrated for the exact reason that you talk about is you could take those two tapes and watch the routes that they run against us. They didn't change a thing. And if you're Atlanta, why would you? What you would say, you'd go into this game and say, we're going to play them the same way that we played in the championship game, and then we'll have a secondary offensive strategy in case they adjust and make a change. Then we have something to counteract that with, because they probably were saying, well, there's no way that Dom would come in with the same defensive strategy. And so, you know, but just in case, we're going to start out the exact same way. And I'm guessing it was a great surprise that by the middle of the third quarter, we were still throwing the same defense at them that they'd seen twice last year.
Yeah, that opening drive for the Falcons is about as easy as it gets for an NFL team. And now, granted, it wasn't the Falcons weren't playing against that vaunted Bears defense that they were playing in week one. So you could expect a little bit of improvement. But yeah, it just so quickly down the field, and like you said, not changing a thing seemingly. And one of the big things that have come are two different viewpoints that have come about this game, and we can talk about both of them before we get into the nuts and bolts of this. Even in some discussions that I had on Twitter, it was basically, well, it's week two, settle down. Which is an okay argument, provided you last week were saying, well, it's week one, right, so it doesn't matter that we just kick the garbage out of a team that's supposed to go to the Super Bowl this year. So you can take it however you want, but to me, you know, these games still count, and we'll get into some of the long-term playoff scenarios, but this is a week two game now, and to just get boat raced like that is not a great sign.
And you know, you have to believe that the coaching staff and the players have all circled this one in red on the calendar since last year. So it's not like, oops, oh, we forgot we were playing the Falcons this week. It's, you know, we've been looking at the tape of the championship game and seeing what we did wrong and making adjustments. And you know, we've made some adjustments in some players. Although, you know, it's funny. I was listening to what's the show with it's not Uninterrupted. It's Undisputed.
Oh, with Skip Bayless.
Yeah, and Skip Bayless. And I was mad at him at the time. He said, "Listen, they haven't changed anything back there. They have virtually the same personnel." And of course, I as a Packer fan who's been analyzing say, "Oh, well, you know, no, Damaris Randall, he's healthy, and Quentin Rollins is healthy now, and Kevin King is healthy now." So I was just mad at him. He called it. He absolutely called it right on the...
So this was prior to the game.
Oh, very much so. Okay. Yeah, they were talking about it last Thursday.
Okay.
And Shannon Sharpe was saying, I think this is a much different team. I think it's a much better team. And Skip got it exactly right. To my great horror, he got it exactly right.
I hate when he's right.
Yeah, it's actually, because it just encourages him, yeah. Actually.
And he'll forget the next six things he gets wrong on the show today.
And so here's my, you know, to dive right into it. In the first drive, all you see are crossing routes. Now, I have to understand that when you put together offensive and defensive strategies, you have offensive routes that are man beaters, man coverage beaters, and you have routes that are zone beaters, okay? And very often what will happen is that they'll send a player in motion, and if the players on defense stay settled, then they're probably playing zone. Mm-hmm. And if a defender goes with the person in motion, then they're very likely in man-to-man. I'm sure that's not a surprise to you. Well, they showed man-to-man very quickly. And then the crossing routes, especially the early ones, if you look to Julio Jones, there is not a play that I remember that's a big play that's just going down the, and running a 10-yard out or a seam route right down the middle. I'm telling you, they crossed and crossed and crossed and crossed and crossed, and exactly the same way last year. And so at some point you have to say, we got to switch to zone. Because you know, we talked about not having really different players, and so the only two variables are players and scheme, and it seemed like we had the same players, and we played the same scheme, so they just did the same offense, and the result was the same.
And we were talking a little bit before we started that, for me, I'm worried about this roster in that I'm not sure how you scheme away some of these deficiencies when you have, you know, Quentin Rollins and Demaryius Randle. Well, now they're healthy. What's the excuse now? You know, they had the struggles last year, but... Also thinking about that, we made two points. It's that, well, it's week two, so these are your players.
Right.
Scheme is all you have to try to change things at this point. You're not going to find Charles Woodson on the waiver wire. And bringing up Charles Woodson, they had some really good defenses in Dom's first 2 years, but they still got slaughtered by Kurt Warner and slaughtered by Roethlisberger and torn to shreds by Tom Brady. If this scheme doesn't work with defensive player of the year, Charles Woodson, prime Clay Matthews, prime Nick Collins, prime Tremont Williams, what the hell chance does Quentin Rollins have?
Yeah, you really struggle here because, you know, all you have, again, are players and scheme. And so my bigger problem is, okay, so if you're man-to-man, even if you have Charles Woodson, if you're playing man-to-man and crossing routes, you're going to get beat. You just plain are because you're always in the trail position. Although I don't understand why they don't just, when they line up at the line of scrimmage, why the defensive back doesn't shade inside and take away that move. So they're playing outside leverage, and then they just go across the field, and they're in trail position. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Deion Sanders. You're going to get beat on that route.
Is it just the inexperience mixed with fear that you're not fast enough, so you're just a step slow always, no matter what they do?
Well, if you're getting beat that often, then you either jam them off the line of scrimmage, which is tough to do with Julio Jones, totally fine, or you play inside leverage so they can't cross over the middle, right? So you play inside leverage, so you have to push them out towards the boundary first, and if they come up, that makes the route a lot
longer.
A lot
it takes
deeper,
a lot longer.
A lot deeper, and it leads you to the safeties.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, again, I struggle when I talk about this because I feel like I'm really ragging every single week on this, but this is ninth grade stuff. This is basic, basic stuff. And if you can't beat them with players and you don't change your scheme, you're going to be a very, very good team out in the divisional round of the playoffs again this year.
And that's what a lot of people's fears are, I think, after today. And you got to talk about injuries, but on defense, Mike Daniels was the only one injured, and he's probably their best player on defense right now.
Yes.
Depending on your opinion of Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, he's, to me, watching him yesterday, I think he's a really nice player and he can grow. He feels a bit like Al Harris in the mid-2000s where everybody tells me how great he is, and then I don't see it.
I don't see him on the screen.
Yeah. Where is his impact? But Mike Daniels is gone, but that's one guy. He's a defensive tackle. Even if you stick John Randle or Warren Sapp and you take them out of their defenses, or flip that around, I guess. Let's say Mike Daniels is as good as John Randle. Taking out a pass rushing defensive end in a 3-4 should not make your entire defense fall apart.
No,
I think it would have been similar had he been in there.
Yeah, and again, so let's go back to ninth grade. So the outside rushers are designed to rush outside so that the quarterback has to step up in the pocket. Well, that's designed so that you get some penetration either from the defensive, the nose tackle or the two defensive tackles or the blitzing, you know, double blitz in the A gap or whatever that is. And so, but if you're thinking that, you know, Matt Ryan doesn't know how to step up in the pocket, then I think you haven't been watching an awful lot of film. So
with two of the best pass catching backs, one of which is always out as an eligible receiver. So he's got somebody to go to if he needs to in 2 seconds.
Yeah, so this whole idea that we run the nitro package, but we don't match somebody right up with the running back, you know, you have Burnett on the field for a reason, and then, you know, he's playing back in coverage but not picking up. I would love it if somebody wrote in and talked a little bit about seeing something that what I didn't do, and I would be happy to step back and say, Chris, I think, you know, you really made a mistake here in your analysis. but I don't see the flaw in it. And the last the last thing here is if you look at the scratches at the beginning. So you got Bulaga and Bakhtiari. If you're a Packer fan, the first thing you said was
game over.
Right. Well, let's get Aaron Rodgers out healthy. Yeah. You know.
I said before the season I didn't like their chances against anyone. That was my horror scenario in our preseason preview was, what do you do if these guys don't play? I was worried about what you do when you're playing the Lions with that. What about one of your toughest games of the year?
Yeah, exactly right. And the last thing I'll go to, and then I'll stop with the scheme stuff. But again, you have players and scheme.
Yep.
The players are who they are.
Yep.
And if it's not working, you have to change your scheme. Well, you know, you've got your two tackles out. So that means your outside linebackers are coming hard. And they did. And they've got really good outside linebackers coming hard. For 50 years, when people rush really hard, what are the two plays we call on offense to stop them from coming so hard?
Screens and draws.
Screens and draws. And we have one of the most amazing screen running backs you could ever ask for in Ty Montgomery. How many screens did you see?
Yeah, not many.
I
can't remember one off the top of my head. I mean, maybe after the game was over and nobody was paying attention anymore.
You know, so once again, we're not – my fear is that McCarthy thinks he's smarter than 50 years and 1,000 football games. Just, you know, do what everyone else does.
Yeah.
And again, you've got this amazing person. I mean, can you imagine Ty Montgomery out in space with two blockers in front of him? I'll take that every single time. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm Mike McCarthy gets paid an awful lot more than I do to coach, and I'm sure he knows more than I do. But as somebody who has watched probably 700, I hate to admit it, 700 or so football games in their lives, you just expect things to happen, right? You've seen them so often. Okay, here comes the rush. They're blitzing their linebackers. Here comes the screen. Here comes the screen. Okay, this time it's going to be... And it doesn't happen, and you go, wow, I must be missing something.
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought up the offense, so we can transition there. I think the defense, unfortunately, kind of looked like we were worried they might against some of these teams. Hopefully they can figure it out once, you know, these guys maybe get a little bit more cohesion with each other. They only gave up 34 points. One of them was on a Rodgers fumble return for a touchdown. But I got the impression that Atlanta scored 34 because they decided they didn't want to score anymore.
You know, it was not as close. I mean, if you look at the score, if you didn't see the game and you looked at the score, you'd say, well, you know, we were closer than last time. No, we weren't.
No.
I think you know, there's really, you know, Jordy goes out early.
Yeah.
That's and, you know, when he – again, it's the non-contact injuries that get you concerned. Because remember, when he went down with that knee, now I'm not saying I don't know what it is. There's no indication that we know what it is, but he didn't get hit. I mean, he wasn't hit on when he went out,
mm-hmm.
And so he goes out really early. And then I think at that point, people go, you know, we're right back to 2 years ago again. We can't beat man coverage.
Yeah,
and I didn't see a lot of open players,
and that's what I kind of wanted to transition to is that. You know, I think the Falcons sort of gave up because they didn't trust that the Packers' offense was going to post any kind of threat in that second half. So they went into kill-the-clock mode midway through the third quarter. I mean, it was ridiculous. But I think it's always on the defense, and people probably think we're being too critical of the offense. The defense always has to play better. They are culpable in almost every Packer loss. They almost always lose when Aaron Rodgers isn't perfect. But it's partially on the offense that you have to be a little bit more consistent and keep drives alive because part of – it's been this way for many teams. All of Peyton Manning's teams were like this. Part of the thing that helps your so-so defense become an above-average defense is the fear of God that you put into the defense with your offense. And it was pretty clear right away after Nelson got hurt, you're already missing the tackles. You got to play with what you have. But it was pretty clear that they were off. And once that happens, well, then – you know, they always say pin your ears back and rush. Matt Ryan can do that on the other side. I can throw it to anybody. Every jump ball, I'm taking a shot because if they intercept it, we'll get it right back.
Exactly. And I'll tell you this, from a psychological standpoint, the defense, they see when Rodgers is on. They see when the offense is on. And they, you know, when he's on, they go, okay, I mean, we're going to fight and fight and fight and fight because we get, listen, as long as we give him one more possession than they have, we have a shot. And when they don't believe that, I'm not saying anybody mails it in. I'm just saying there's this creeping despair that comes in that says, you know, I know we're going to fight like all get out, but I think it's just not our day. And that's, you know, that that's when you're really in trouble, when you when people stop believing that you're the better team. And I think from the first snap, Atlanta thought they were the better team, and I think at least last night they were.
Absolutely. So let's go more in-depth into the offense. So I said on Twitter right away when I found out that both Bakhtiari and Bulaga were out, and Spriggs, that my, as you mentioned before, that my biggest concern was Aaron Rodgers getting out of this game healthy. And he took some really, really ridiculous shots, but it seems like nothing that's going to be permanent. I heard on the radio on the way home from work that they thought that Jordy Nelson had, maybe the play before he came out, had hit knees with somebody.
Oh, okay.
So it might have been a bruise. It sounds like Nelson was injured. Cobb is having an MRI on his shoulder. Mike Daniels left with a hamstring injury. Ahmad Brooks was already out with a concussion. Bulaga has an ankle injury, and Bakhtiari has a hamstring injury. So those guys are all going to be probably okay. It's not going to be a long-term thing. But
right.
To me, we just got a glimpse yesterday of perhaps this team is so reliant on a very small core of players. The number one team with the most people on the injury and suspended list yesterday was the Patriots. One of the other higher ones was the Broncos.
I'll be darned.
You don't have to fall apart when you miss some of these guys. And I know that that can be explained, but if you're waiting for the day that this team is completely healthy, it's been completely healthy for about four games in 2014 in the last 10 years. It's not going to happen. These guys are going to be your guys for a lot of the season.
Yeah, and that speaks a lot to your depth. I mean, that's why you build your depth. But, you know, if Vic Beasley went out...
And it did nothing to their defense.
Right, exactly right. You know, so it's not only next man up, but there's somebody coming from the other side that's that's equally talented. So I just want the listeners to, if they go back and they take a look at some of the stuff, you go, okay, so put yourself in the position as a coach. And at some point, you say to yourself, our players in certain positions aren't as good as theirs. We got to do, you know, Don Meredith, you say trickeration. you have to do something, right? You have to do fly sweeps. You have to do end rounds. You have to run screens. You have to run draws. Because I think over and over again, you go, no, we're as good. We're as good. And at some point, when you're down 34 to 10, you go.
You punt with 6 minutes left in the game.
Yeah. That.
And then don't take out your quarterback, even though it's clear you've given up.
That's super confusing for me. I never know if that's Aaron Rodgers just saying, I'm going to go back out just to be the strong guy. But there is just zero value in that. You're not going to win the game. And goodness knows, you're exactly right. He took some shots.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned a whole bunch of things, and these are the types of games where we just kind of just let everything, you know, come off our chest because we're really frustrated, and I think a lot of the fans are as well. So I think Rodgers, he played okay at the start. I think it was always going to be difficult for him because you're playing, you know, guys who almost have no experience as tackles. But like you said, the play calling didn't quite help him out that much. And then you lose Jordy Nelson, and then we're all having flashbacks to 2015 where nobody on the team seems to be able to get open against man which, again, it's man coverage. How do you get to the NFL where you can't beat people in man coverage? And it's one if you're Jordy Nelson, and you're up against Pro Bowlers almost every week.
Mm-hmm.
But Davante Adams... And Randall, I know Randall Cobb was hurt, but Geronimo Allison, we got rid of a defensive tackle and a defensive back to keep you as our seventh wide receiver.
Yep.
Perhaps you can beat their dime back in some one-on-one routes.
That's the thing. When their fourth cornerback is better than your third wide receiver, you're really in trouble.
Yeah.
And so I think we have tacticians. You know, we don't have great athletes. We have incredibly reliable wide receivers. But you know, we don't have game breakers, and that's okay. But again, let's go back to scheme. So what do the Patriots do when they don't have game breakers? They put in rubs. They put in picks. Now, nobody likes to call it a pick, but goodness knows, we should probably talk about that too.
Yeah, because the Packers maybe tried that.
Yeah, so can I talk about that? Just
absolutely.
For a second? So let's okay.
That's
so,
another big thing. People complaining that the referees may have cost the Packers.
Yeah. So I see. I think this is on the play calling. So if you picture where Martellus Bennett gets called for his pick, right? So think about it. He's from the inside. He's going out, and Randall Cobb is coming back in. Well, that drag route that he's running puts him with his face away from the quarterback, and then he kind of puts his arms down like it looks like he's going to make contact. I mean, listen.
That's a basketball pick. You're not looking for the football.
Yeah. But again, think about the route setup. The route made him looking away from, facing away from the quarterback. And now, I will tell you that there is no offensive pass interference within 1 yard of the line of scrimmage. And he was absolutely within 1 yard of the line of scrimmage. It's a terrible call.
Yeah.
However, if you look at the rub or the pick play that the Falcons run at the goal line, here you have a receiver that's coming in from the outside, looking in for the ball, and then the running back goes out underneath him. Well, that looks like somebody's just, you know, running a route and mm-hmm. getting ready to catch the ball, and somebody else just happened to get in the way. Well,
so you're trying to do the exact same thing, but you're disguising it much better.
The route call gives the official the opportunity to say, that's not a real route. He's not looking for the ball. So when we used to run these routes, I literally would tell the receiver, you know, to peel off and then turn around like you're getting a rebound, right? Mm-hmm. Put your hands up like the ball's coming. Now, you know the ball's not coming, but you don't have to pick the guy. You just have to make it hard to get around you.
Sure.
And Martellus Bennett, enormous human being. I think we've talked about that earlier. He did not have to set a strong basketball pick to get Randall Cobb that open. So if you think about it, be mad as you want because it's a bad call. On the other hand, if you look at the play design, one is easy to call, and the other one is easy to not call, and that's, you know, that's not new.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a place for emphasis this year in the NFL. So they've been talking about it since training camp, and here we are, one success and one failure.
That's a great breakdown. So I'm glad you did that because I think that's a nuance that a lot of people that were watching the game probably missed. And you said that's an emphasis this year. I've been begging for that to be an emphasis because the Patriots and right. Denver, when Manning was there, have just been running it constantly. And to me, cheap sounds too harsh of a word, but I think you got to help out the defense a little bit. But could you save that emphasis for one of them Patriot games? Like when Hulk Hogan's catching 100 passes or whatever that kid's name is? You know, I get it. I think they were good calls, but then... Again, it's you lose Jordy Nelson, and you're left with hoping they have too many guys on the field, hoping they jump off sides, running iffy pick routes. It's like you have nothing left but gamesmanship.
Yeah, so the pick route is the exact right route to run there, right? Because we've decided by that point in the game, right before the halftime, that our receivers can't beat them. Now you have – that's a scheme thing. So they did the exact right thing, but the play they called – you know, this is really easy. If you watch somebody and they're looking away from the quarterback, it's going to get called a pick.
Yeah.
But the Patriots, who are amazing at understanding the rules, if you watch the pick routes, they're always their hands are up like the ball's coming and they're looking right back at the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can make all the arguments in the world that that's a pick, but that's a legitimate route because mm-hmm. that offensive player has the right to that spot of ground as well. So I love the fact mm-hmm. that they went to something from scheme. And then went away from it.
Yeah.
So where's the next one? You know, it's like we're so mad about this. We're so mad we're not going to run that play that was supposed to get 40 yards.
Just get better at it.
Just get better at it.
So you're telling me the Patriots play really close to the rules? That sounds unlike them.
Yeah, it really is. It's a new thing. I think they're just trying it this year, but they're being extraordinarily careful because they don't really ever want to get caught.
Because okay.
You know what? You can lose games. Your quarterback can get set out. You can lose draft picks. It's you just don't ever want to go there.
All right, you heard it here first. Pick gate is on the horizon, so look out for that. To me, the biggest crushing part of this game was when they were down 17-7 nearing halftime, and I believe they had all three timeouts, so they're going for broke. But I believe it was, I can't remember if it was Adams or Allison. I think it was Geronimo Allison, couldn't beat a guy one-on-one on a go route. Rodgers overthrows him. Maybe Rodgers shouldn't have thrown it, but I think he's down 17-7 with backup tackles. You're missing your best defensive player. Maybe you're taking a chance. And then Atlanta gets an interception. They score right away. I mentioned the Dallas thing because I love to talk about old stuff. It reminded me, because I'm a total old school football nerd, immediately of the 93 divisional round loss to Dallas, where the Packers are in a dogfight with Dallas. Dallas scores a field goal right before the half. It's 10-3. You're thinking, okay, the Packers are hanging in there. They've kind of taken their best shot and hung around. We might be okay. Dallas kicks off. Corey Harris fumbles the kickoff. Troy Aikman on the next play throws another touchdown. So you're down 17-3 at the half, and the game's over.
And you go into halftime getting gut punched.
Exactly.
Really,
and this was the same way. You went from, well, we're hanging around, this isn't as bad as we thought, to game's over.
Yeah, so I think that the pick here, again, go back and look at the tape because I love it when our listeners really kind of tear apart the tape. Geronimo Allison is running a back shoulder throw. It's not a go route.
Okay.
But he's even with the cornerback, And so Aaron, it's a read route. So so if you're if the cornerback's on the top of you, you stop and you throw a back shoulder throw. If you're even with them, then you throw the you throw a deep ball or you throw a fade. Because in the world of wide receivers, there's a saying: if I'm even, I'm leaving. Right? Yep. We say that all the time. If I'm even, I'm leaving. Which means if I'm even, get put the ball up there because I can run faster than he can backpedal.
Yep.
Well, Geronimo Addison throttles down about 15 yards out, expecting the back shoulder throw. Aaron throws a fade, and you know, pretty easy. So that's a playing together kind of thing. Yeah. I think it's I don't think it's a desperation throw. I think it's a misread.
And Allison was playing in his first game, so maybe that'll improve.
Yeah, but again, once again, it's you're doing something because you can't beat him one on one.
Yeah,
and that's why that's why you've got to run combo routes, and that's why you've got to run choice routes and whip routes, and those. Think about it. Tom Brady throws 75% of his passes within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And about four times a game he goes deep, but he gets them deep, and you're like, how does he do that? Well, it's because he's checking down, and he has all these choice routes. And you earn the right. We say this all the time. You earn the right to go deep. You run the ball, you throw short, and then you get people to come up, and you earn. And I don't think we earned it last night, and that's that interception was a good indication of that.
No, and outside of Jordy Nelson and maybe Devontae Adams for the second half of last year, not a lot of these guys have ever earned that right, so that'll be difficult going forward. So transitioning, I think the offensive line probably, I don't want to go too deep into these guys because hopefully we don't have to be talking about them much longer. Rodgers got sacked 3 times, but that was the same number he was sacked against Seattle. So I think all things considered,
they did fine.
They did fine.
I was really surprised, actually. Yeah. And they didn't get a lot of help. I mean, there weren't a ton of chips on the quarterback, although there was one sack with Rodgers that Ty Montgomery comes off to the right-hand side.
Yeah.
And he actually picked our own defensive tackle or our offensive tackle, and the guy goes around. That happens. 3 sacks when you're missing both of your starting outside tackles. I hate to say it this way. That's not bad.
No.
And
especially with Rodgers, he gets sacked a lot. He holds the ball. It's part of his game.
Yeah, and the quick game has to, when you do that, you have to throw the quick. The quick game. You've got the in and outs and the quick ends. He threw some slants. There's just classic stuff that you do, and we started doing it, had some success, and then we went, okay, we've got that. Now let's go to something else. No, you do that until they stop it, which opens up something else.
So let's talk about injuries, because this was the part that was the greatest frustration for me. I don't think there's anything you can do about it. I looked at every single injury that was listed on Pro Football Reference to try to see where the Packers rank. Are they super high? Are they super low? They were about the middle of the pack. They had all those hamstring injuries, but there seems to be a lot of other hamstring injuries. I don't quite know what to make of this, because this team always seems to be snake bitten by injury in a spot on the depth chart that can't absorb that many injuries. I don't know what you're supposed to do, but there's so many things going through my mind, like, are these guys really that, and bear with me here, I'm not calling anybody, anything,
frail,
but
yeah,
I mean, I called them, I called the team fragile on Twitter. I didn't mean that they were fragile and then they got hurt. I meant that you're very dependent on a very small number of guys.
Sure, one injury and you're really in trouble.
Exactly, and that's what I meant by fragile. But it's so confusing to have so many muscle injuries. The whole idea of this preseason and nobody plays is so that these guys don't get hurt. It's like, it's happening anyways. It's so confusing right now, and I don't know what can be done about it. But as a fan, you see how good your team can be. But outside of family night, they're never healthy.
I hate to say it. I don't mean to laugh at that. That's a wonderful and horrible observation at the outside. It's very confusing. The only thing that makes any sense is that they don't play in the preseason, because football shape, being in shape and being in football shape are two very, very different things. Both for wind, right? Your lung capacity is very different, but also your strength and your recovery and most importantly, your flexibility. And a lot of these deep tissue injuries or the hamstrings, that's all flexibility kind of stuff. So if you've spent too much time on the weight room and not enough time on flexibility, you become very tightly strung, like a piano string, and that doesn't take much time. But so you made a really interesting observation that maybe for the last several years as Packers, we've been talking about how many injuries, and we have all these injuries, and then you identified two other teams that had way more injuries, and how did they do this weekend?
Well, Denver destroyed the Dallas Cowboys.
They had more injuries than the Packers?
They had, I think, 13 listed on Sunday morning, and the Packers had 12.
Holy cow.
And then the New England Patriots, I believe, had 18. And granted, they were playing the Saints. I'm pretty sure Alabama would have beat the Saints 36-20. They're in rough shape. But the argument behind this is that you can't blame injuries.
Right.
Every single team has injuries. They can explain why you lost, but the standings don't care. They're not going to put an asterisk next to this one if it costs you home field advantage in a second round of the playoffs. And that's where it's a point of frustration. You can understand why that's happening. And maybe you're mad at the football gods because it keeps happening to us in positions that we can't have it. But I'm sure seeing some of those things, everybody thinks they're the most snake-bitten team in the league. Healthiest, by the way, San Francisco. It doesn't seem to be doing much for them.
Yeah, but and that, I will tell you that. So think about that. That is a function of being young. Mm-hmm. San Francisco is one of the youngest teams. Green Bay, yeah, you know, point. As much as we think Jordy Nelson is our brand new wide receiver out of Kansas State, you know, he's in his, what, 10th season?
I watched that in my college dorm room when he was drafted. I have now worked at a college for 7 years. So he's getting old.
Yeah. So there's an, I'll go back to scheme on another thing. So the Dom Capers chooses to have two outside linebackers and two defensive tackles.
Yep.
Okay. So remember, we've made the transition from four down linemen to three down linemen to two down linemen. And if you have two down linemen, that means it's always two on three at the very least, mm-hmm. and you have a running back there. Mm-hmm. So those two guys in the middle, oh, we have another person to drop back in coverage. Fantastic. Those two guys are getting the snot. Yeah. You know, Mike Daniels must be an unbelievable man because of what he did in Seattle. And he is, of course. I don't I would not question that ever. I would probably just hand him my money and say, you know, you can walk wherever you want with it because nobody's going to take it from you.
A hamstring injury is now officially a tough guy injury for all time.
but if you think about those two players in the middle, they're getting cross-checked and they're getting chop-blocked and they're getting trap-blocked. You're really setting those two guys up to get the snot kicked out of them. And so we don't watch that, right? Because we watch the ball.
Yeah.
We watch the quarterback and we watch the ball. But if you watch those guys, it's forever two-on-one. And then somehow we wonder why we don't get pass rush. Well, not only don't get pass rush, go ahead and rush 70 times a game against two people and tell me you don't blow out a hamstring. Tell me you don't blow out a quad. It's the nature of the scheme that you're kind of betting that those guys are going to hold up. And two games in, that's starting to have a pretty big cost to it.
And rarely has that been the case in this team recently, and perhaps that's just the nature of the NFL, but then depth becomes a concern. And it could just be a good old-fashioned curse. Ahmad Brooks missed 6 games in 8 years, and now played two plays in the 2 games he's been with the Packers.
Yeah. Although, remember, in 2010, we had, if I remember correctly, we had a few injuries that year when we won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And so it speaks to depth. It just speaks to overall depth and depth of talent.
And one thing, too, about the 2010 team that could give hope for these guys if these injuries continue is not all injuries are equal. The Packers were very injured in 2010, and it's the biggest part of the narrative that year. Mm-hmm. They were very injured very early. They lost everybody by week 6,
and
pretty much all of the guys that replaced them were healthy the rest of the year. So by the time they got to the playoffs, your new guys, your reserves, had been the starters altogether. That was your team and had been for about 2.5 months. That's different than 2016 or 2014 when you lose a bunch of guys late.
Because then you have to have backups who haven't played all year. And again, just keep going back to that conditioning thing. I don't care how much conditioning you do, and I don't care how much practice you do. If you are not playing football against large human beings who have aggression in their minds and in their hearts, you are not in football shape. So I think we're at the point with injuries where we say, once again, you know, we know what we have.
Yep.
So this is the whole thing. Now, the only excuse in the world. So if you go back to when we played the Cardinals, is that 2 or 3 years ago, where we lost on that fumble that Dansbury took back into the end zone?
Are you talking 09, or are you talking the one in 2015 where they lost all their receivers at the end of the game?
It's the one where it goes to overtime.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers, the 2009 wild card.
Okay. Wow, it's that long ago. Holy Christ. Yeah. So anyway, in that case, the Packers played the Cardinals straight up, mm-hmm. and they lost to them. But then when they came to that game, they changed a lot of things. So the only excuse here from my perspective, from a coaching perspective, is we show them vanilla, expecting fully that we're going to see them sometime further down the road. Now, to give up home field advantage to get that knowledge, I can't believe that's the case. I just think we got outplayed.
Well, and that's what I want to get into, because that's another talking point that I've heard about people is, oh, we'll see them again, or this is a 10-11 win team. Win and get in. That is not true, and I have the stats to prove it because I'm me, I always do. So these games, whether you're injured or not, whether you're rusty or not, whether it's just week two, it doesn't matter. The truth is these games matter. They lost home field advantage to the Seattle Seahawks in 2014 because they lost to Seattle on the Thursday that started the season, and it carried all the way through. And what it does is, yes, you can overcome it, but it eliminates your margin for error. They struggled early in 2014, and then in order to get home field advantage, they had to win all eight of the final games of the season. They won seven of them. Great job. They didn't win eight, so they're going back to Seattle instead of Seattle coming to Green Bay. And here are some stats that should sober people that think it's not that big of a deal that they lost to the Falcons. So the NFC, since they added, or since they went to the current playoff format in 1990, the average one seed in the NFC has 13.1 wins in the regular season. Your average two seed has 11.9 wins in the regular season. And by the way, the two seed in the NFC has hosted the NFC Championship game four times in 27 years.
Wow.
So either they lose or they have to go to the one seed. And that to me, and here are some other things. People always point to the 2010 Packers. That's the anomaly. And I know it happened to us. I've said, I think before on the show, that they caught lightning in a bottle. If you expect them to take that route again, you're asking them to catch a second bolt. It's not reasonable. Of the 78 teams that have played in the Super Bowl since the wild card round existed, 51 of those never left home before the Super Bowl.
Wow, that tells you everything you need to know. And the difference between going home and not going home in one game.
One game.
11.9 to 13.1, which is 1.2 games.
And you just lost that
game. You just lost that game. So
so now you basically, if history is a guide, and the Packers, regardless of what anybody says, they need home field advantage to go to the Super Bowl. And I know they were a six seed and won it in 2010 and were one and done in 2011 with home field advantage. But since 2012, the last 5 years, Packers 3-11 on the road against playoff-bound teams. Those three wins, Houston, Minnesota, Detroit.
Wow, that tells you everything you need to know. So, I mean, we talk ourselves into this idea that it's okay.
Yeah.
And I think we do that because we don't want to face this fact that that's just plain not okay. And that we, you know, we've seen this movie before and we know how it ends.
Yeah.
And that scares us to death. And so when people say, oh, it's just one game or it's early, you know, my son Ben and I were talking about it, and he said, well, it's really early in the game. And I said, you know, Ben, it doesn't matter whether you lose to him early or late. There's still a loss in the loss column. And that's all those things add up at the end of the year, and that's exactly what you're talking about. So I think we're frustrated Packer fans because one of two things has to be true. Either our team's just not as good, or we're not smart enough to change our scheme or do something different to see if we can beat them with scheme. And either one of those things is a very hard pill to swallow for a Packer fan.
Absolutely. And I'm going to take my own advice from last week, who was trying not to get too excited about beating Seattle. I was saying it's only week one. What does this mean? I'll take that same route this week and give these guys a chance to maybe get healthier and maybe improve a little bit to put themselves in a better position. And I was having a Twitter discussion with John Dinsey, who, if people are just following the Twitter and are like, who's this guy who Eric keeps talking to nonstop? He's not just some stranger. I've known John since I was 6 years old. So we've had these discussions well before the existence of Greedy Gold Forever. But just in the chance that John's listening, I'm not saying we should throw in the towel and that it's over. But you have to acknowledge that the Packers' margin for error got considerably smaller after losing yesterday. And that's, I think, the thing to understand.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's an unavoidable fact. And it really does. You know, your opening where you talked about Dallas, this seems like the same kind of domination. Yeah. You know, we go down there. We always play down there. It seems like we forever play down there, which that sounds familiar as well. And, you know, we go in with great hope and great hype. And it turns out badly. Now, on a positive thing, because we've been a little bit negative.
Well, so, they did get their brains beat.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah. So think of the interior of the offensive line. The pass rush came from the outside. We have three guys in there who really held up. I mean, Jahari Evans.
Yeah.
You know, your center.
Yeah, Lindsley had a good game.
Taylor, really good game, which means you should be able to run the ball. Oh my goodness! So you don't, and you don't run it wide because you have your tackles on the outside and they're backup tackles, and so you stop trying to run the ball wide and you do what people again have done for 50 years, and you go with your strength and you run it up. Run it up the middle. The second thing I'll mention is there were moments where Kevin King didn't look great, but I saw a statistic that in the second half when Kevin King was guarding Julio Jones, they threw it Jones four times. He had zero catches. Now, yeah. I don't think it's because he intimidated him. I think it's because it's a much better physical matchup.
Mm-hmm.
My complete confusion is you bring Devon House back, who's 6 foot one.
I think he got hurt. I think that's what happened.
Oh, did he? Okay, okay.
I forgot to mention him. I think he pulled a hammy.
Randall start on?
Yeah. They must be doing some impossible stretches because everybody's hammy got hurt yesterday.
Yeah, but I'm, you know, Demarius Randall is fully 5 or 6 inches shorter than Julio Jones and probably 70 pounds lighter, and we line him up and go, we sure hope this goes well. Well, we got two guys who are bigger statured guys in King and Devon House to play him for this exact reason, to play Dez and to play Julio Jones. And then you start out the very first game, I see Randall lined up with him, and I see him run this crossing pattern, and I go, wow, I think I can just go to the fridge now and get some because I know how this story ends.
Well, I like the idea that you had of taking it positive, where rather than slam Rollins and Randall, I mean, they've been struggling for a while, we can take that. Hey, they already had enough confidence in their number one pick that let's see what we got. Go cover Julio Jones, and he did a reasonably good job. It's Julio Jones. The guy's tearing up the whole league.
And that's why I really struggle a lot. You know, you have Sherman for Seattle. I mean, if you put Julio Jones and Sherman, arguably the best cornerback in the league, some would argue, let's say in the top three.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Julio Jones still catches 4 or 5 passes.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, we don't have Sherman on our team, so that's why you play zone against those guys.
Yeah.
It's the trouble is coaches see playing zone as a give up, which is saying our cornerbacks are not as good as your wide receivers. But at some point, that's truth.
Yeah.
It's just plain truth. And then to line up our shortest guy, our shortest, fastest guy against the monster who's killed us the last two times. You know, I don't know. Apparently there was something I missed.
Well, and especially in 2017, where it's basically designed for the offense to excel. But again, they've had so much difficulty doing either of those strategies that you wonder if... I think it's tough for the defensive coordinators to just let them bleed you down the field like that. Let me rephrase that. As tough as that is for them to let the other team bleed you down the field like that, it feels better than giving up 80-yard plays. And so I've seen that with Dom a lot, where if he doesn't have a lot of confidence in his guys, he's like, well, I'll hope you throw an incompletion in one of these 12 plays that you're going to have, rather than us be out here for 2 minutes.
And you know what's funny? If you look at Atlanta, who totally owned our defense, there weren't 50-yard bombs, right? There were all 20-yard.
There were 10 plays of over 15 yards.
Exactly, but right. So all, you know, and again, you can't not know this. So I'm gonna get off that for a second and just say, you know, I think there's hope. I think Kevin King is going to be a good player. I think in a couple of years, he's going to add 20 pounds of muscle, and he's going to really be an experienced guy. And I think we made a great pick there. We just, you know, we came into this thing a little bit underloaded. We came to a gunfight with a knife.
Well, hopefully our knife grows into a gun by the end of the season, because there are no guns in the store right now,
right.
I think. So some interesting things that happened during the week. Ricky Jean Francois and Ladarius Gunter were both released. They needed to make one roster spot for... I believe they added one of the tackles because they had the issue with the depth, and then they needed to make a spot for Geronimo Allison if they wanted to keep him on the team.
I think they brought Panky up.
Yes, I believe you're right. So they got rid of two veterans, and I mean, Francois is kind of strange. I mean, he's a bigger name, but I don't recall seeing much of him earlier in the season. Gunter, it's weird to see him go. Maybe they're done with that project. I don't know.
Well, so he got picked up by Carolina not too far down the road. And listen, he is what he is. He's a really good third cornerback. He's an absolutely great, you know, he's long, he's lanky. You know, his design is to shadow a tight end or a back out of the backfield. And you know, so he did exactly, you know, you can't buy a Toyota Corolla and then be mad it doesn't win drag races. You know, just think, stay in your lane, use things for what they were designed. And Gunter, listen, the Packer coaches said nothing but wonderful things about him. Said good guy, worked his butt off, was a great teammate, good in the community. And so I, you know, I was strutting around saying, listen, it's going to be different because our number one starting cornerback didn't, you know, isn't even on the team anymore. I think he did exactly what he could, and it tells you just how bad off we were last year.
Does it tell you how bad we are, how bad off we were last year, but also that it seems like they tend to favor these project guys more than the sure thing with the moderately high ceiling? They would rather, I think they would rather bomb with Rollins and Randall in hopes that they'll turn into Tremon Williams than just keep around a third cornerback.
Well, this is something that has forever upset me, that we think, again, we think we're smarter than anybody else. You know, Quentin Rollins was a... So Randall was a safety, right?
Yep.
Randall was a safety, and Quentin Rollins is a one-year basketball player.
One-year football player and a basketball scholarship.
And so to say in this position where the wide receivers in the NFL are the most amazing athletes, I mean, they're all great athletes. You know, I think running backs, wide receivers, and cornerbacks are probably the best athletes that exist in the on a football field. But you have the absolute best wide receivers who've been playing wide receiver. I mean, you don't have outstanding wide receivers who just who used to be a tackle. You know, like they've been playing wide receiver since they were in seventh grade. And then you choose somebody who has got 1 year in, and you know, again, it's like, well, we're smarter, that we see something that other people don't. No, I love sure things. I really do. I'm really anxious for. Adams to come up, Montrevious Adams. He's a big body in the middle who is designed to do that and been doing it his whole life.
Yeah.
The project thing makes me crazy because there's no possible way that you match somebody up who hasn't played against that level of competition any time in their life. You match them up and you can be surprised it doesn't end well for you.
Well, and it goes to similar to the point of people thinking that you can just make the playoffs and go to the Super Bowl. They remember the few examples. I think people doing those projects, they think everybody's going to be Antonio Gates. Well, for every Antonio Gates that played basketball in college and then is potentially a Hall of Famer, there were probably eight guys who didn't make the team.
Right. And you know when you try and be smarter than everybody else out there, the chance of being wrong is really big. So when you miss really big. And then when you miss really big with your first and second draft choices, you're in trouble because all the really incredibly good cornerbacks are gone. You know, that's a prime position, right? You have cornerbacks, you have left tackles, you have rushing defensive outside edge players, and you have cornerbacks. Mm-hmm. And those are the people who go in the first two rounds. So when you get that wrong, you really set yourself back a long way and very hard to recover because you're right. They're not standing on the street corner waiting to, waiting to be picked up by a team.
Absolutely. Before we move on, we definitely want to get to your Facebook comments because we had a lot of good discussion this afternoon on the Green and Gold Forever Facebook page, and like we always do after these games. It sounds really bad, but I almost look forward to talking to everyone after a loss more than a win. I mean, a win is nice. You're like, hooray, we won.
Right.
But it's more fun when the sky is falling.
I think that's when the analysis comes in. When you win, everyone's just happy, and you go, oh, we'll just do that again next week. But when you dig in to the technical side of why things went wrong, now you can fix them.
Yeah.
And then you see if whether you fix them or you don't.
Well, it's no fun standing around thinking about all the ways you almost lost or got lucky.
Right.
Okay, first off, Corey Ben, one of our great fans, he said, I have to read what I asked everyone first so some of these thoughts make sense. So I said, the Packers lose a rough one in Atlanta, 34-23. What are your thoughts? What can we make of this team after two games? Will this loss hurt playoff positioning? And how is your hamstring? Because that's Packers were a little hamstrung this weekend. Corey Ben says, I'm a 4.5-hour drive away from Lambeau Field, so it goes without saying that my hamstring is just fine. I think the game confirmed most of what I believed about this team in the preseason. They're probably marginally better than they were last year. In parentheses, we actually got stops during the competitive portion of the game this time, which is true. They, I think it was 11 of 13 on third down in the NFC Championship game, which is as far back as I could see. It's the record since 91, at least. They did better yesterday. Corey adds, but still not where they need to be to win it all, and this was a game that we were never going to win. Some people might point the finger at the offensive PI calls or all the injuries, but the fact is Atlanta was still the better team last night, and it showed. Had they needed to score again near the end to win the game, I'm sure they probably would have. And the unfortunate reality is, yes, this will hurt for playoff positioning. The Packers still have road games against the Vikings, Cowboys, Steelers, Panthers, and Lions on the schedule. Our 8 home games plus the road trips to Chicago and Cleveland constitute the, quote, easy portion of the schedule. Even if we end up 9-1 in those 10 games, now that we've lost to Atlanta, we probably have to go 3-2 those 5 road games if we want to buy in the playoffs. And we might need a 4-1 mark if we want to lock up the top seed. That's a very tall order, probably too tall for this team to pull off. And it's worth pointing out that using 9-1 in the easy games as a starting point is making a lot of assumptions, given that the Packers dropped 3 home games in a year as recently as 2 years ago.
That's great analysis. Holy cow, he really tore that apart.
That's Corey. He always
good job, Corey. Wow, I totally agree with exactly everything he said.
And that goes to the point we were making before. It's not that they're doomed. It's that they have much less room for error. You can't drop the token game to the Lions at home anymore if you want to be a top seed.
Well, we keep saying it's okay, right? We find reasons to make it okay, and then we Aaron Rodgers is the one who said we got to get some of these games at home, and the only way to do that, apparently, from what you're saying, is to win 13 games.
Yeah.
You know, 12 maybe.
Yep.
11, no way. 11 is not going to be enough to give you home field advantage throughout the playoffs, and so 13 is probably the number, and we are now one third of the way to those losses, and with an awful long time to play.
14 to go. That's a little scary.
Yep.
Corey has another comment we can talk after we get to the rest of them, because it's a little bit of a side topic that I wanted to mention. Daniel Johnson, I didn't watch the game nor have any highlights. I just saw the box score. It's going to be tough going from here with the injuries. Also considering how poorly Seattle did against San Francisco, it's easy to say it was more inept offense than good defense with last week's win. My hamstring is fine, but I have a knee injury and sometimes my calf is strained. There are so many jokes and stuff about how bad Cincinnati is. Let's not prove them wrong on Sunday.
Did he say McCaffrey's strained?
I spoke too fast. I can't even enunciate me trying to make fun of my poor enunciation.
I gotcha. All right.
He said his calf is strained.
Oh, I gotcha. All right. My bad. I got a football brain.
But yeah, we didn't even talk about that. My confidence in their chances to win already took a huge hit when I learned that both tackles were gone yesterday. And then on Red Zone, seeing Seattle play toe-to-toe with San Francisco like it's the 2013 NFC Championship game, I'm like, okay, so Seattle's offense is just terrible.
I think we were thinking about Seattle from 2 or 3 years ago when they were really a pretty good. They always they haven't spent a lot of time or money in their offensive line, and so we've always been after their quarterback. But that team, that Seattle team, is not the team from 3 years ago, and of course San Francisco is not the team it was 3 or 4 years ago either. It's a much much bigger drop off. But hope springs eternal, you know. So that's what's important about having the people write in and all the listeners write in, because you know it's very easy to get too far up and it's very easy to get too far down. The only way you fix things is to analyze things for what they actually are, mm-hmm. and then we either have a tool to fix them or we don't.
Absolutely. And Omed Mousley, welcome back. I know you used to comment during the regular season, so I'm glad to see you commenting again. Firstly, my hamstring is fine. No pains, knocks, bumps, or bruises to speak of. So I'm glad everybody's hamstring's
feeling
okay.
That's pretty good, actually. Maybe they should try out for the Packers.
Yeah, maybe you ought to share any training techniques that you have with the Green Bay Packers coaching staff. The defense decided to keep playing the way they did back in the title game, which isn't how a Super Bowl caliber defense plays when they're called upon. But it's week 2, so I'm not going to give up yet. The playoff seeding is slightly in jeopardy. While the Seattle game gives us the advantage, Atlanta looks like they'll roll, and they might play out like it did in 2014 with Seattle, where we lost early and then never caught Seattle. But again, it's hard to see things in January from week 2. Hopefully, it'll turn things around in Cincinnati, but the Pack has a spotty history recently with them, and that is when I'll push the panic button. I assume that means if they lose to Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Let's just be assured that the Packers will recover and try to make this a special year. So definitely share that sentiment with you. The Cincinnati thing that he mentioned is interesting. The last time they've beaten the Bengals was at Riverfront Stadium, and Neil O'Donnell was the quarterback, and Bruce Coslett was the coach.
Oh, my goodness. How far back is that?
19 years ago. So holy since then, cow. They've lost to the Bengals twice at Paul Brown Stadium, and they've lost to them, I believe, just once at Lambeau Field. So they don't play very often, but the fact is, the last time they beat the Bengals, Reggie White was on the team.
Holy cow. That's a long time ago. And Andy Dalton has had his struggles this year, but he always seems to bring out the best in the, or the Packers secondary brings out the best in Andy Dalton, maybe, I don't know.
Brings out the best in anybody who's struggling. Wow. Very good cure. But going back to one of the comments Corey had, because it ties right in nicely to the Bengals in two home games have 9 points in two home games, which is pathetic. Corey says, the scoring issue that we discussed last week, Chris and I discussed it, and then also there's a blog up about scoring.
That's right.
So if you want to go more in-depth than that, please go to the website. It's still down. Teams are averaging 20.3 points per game going into tonight's Lions-Giants tilt. That's down by more than 10% from the first 2 weeks of 2016. And after Corey said that, I looked at the stats myself. 13 of the 28 teams that have already played twice have scored 3 or fewer touchdowns.
Wow.
That's almost half the league that hasn't scored more than 3 touchdowns in 2 games. Last year, that number was 6 teams that failed to score at least 3 touchdowns in their first 2 games.
That's amazing because the rules have favored the offense for a really long time. And you would expect it to be going the other way. I don't think I have a good reason in my mind for that.
Yeah, and I put up a couple of guesses on the Podbean page. So rather than elaborate here, I'll just make you go to the website.
Yeah, that seems like it. But that's the only way that you can actually be heard and your opinion be heard there.
Absolutely, I can't think of any other venue where I could share what I'm thinking. One thing we did forget to talk about is they had a play that Atlanta scored on, which we briefly mentioned, a fumble. Aaron Rodgers got absolutely drilled. I'm so relieved he didn't get injured because he got hit really, really solidly. But he tried to throw the ball away. It was such a violent hit that he really couldn't get anything off of it. I think his feet were clear off the ground when he got hit. They called it a fumble. They reviewed it. They held up that ruling that it was a fumble. I don't know what you thought, Chris. When I saw it live, I thought it definitely wasn't. Then there were a few views where I saw that it might have been, but it looked about as straight as the Music City Miracle did, and that was a lateral. So, well, then I guess if that's a lateral, then that's a fumble.
Well, this should be pretty straightforward, right? So the empty hand, the rule about a fumble or a forward pass is simple, that if the ball is in the hand, if it comes back, comes forward, in a forward motion, 1 millimeter, it's a forward pass.
Yeah.
All right? And so now sometimes if you get hit from behind, it gets shot, put out, but the arm is still back. Well, he's starting a forward motion. Now, granted, he's a tenth of a second into a forward motion. And so I thought it was absolutely incomplete. Now, the next question was it a backwards pass,
yeah,
which makes it a fumble? I have to admit that I was out of the room at the time. I came back, actually, and went, what just happened? I thought we were about to mount something here, but the hit on Rodgers, and you have to start thinking here that the hit on Rodgers, you know, when you're, again, we've talked about this, when you're 27, that hit is, you know, you're in the tub the next day.
Yeah.
When you're 34, you start, you know, he's really good in the pocket, but you start hearing footsteps around you. And those kind of hits are ones that you remember. So as bad as the play was, and again, we got at least one or two in Seattle, yeah, at Green Bay against Seattle. So if you want to complain about the refing, go back and look at the non-interference call against Jimmy Graham in the end zone.
Yeah.
So I don't mind the call so much. I'm just really, again, so a deep drop when you have two offensive linemen, you know, I'm thinking forever, you take that deep drop and you just, it's a shovel pass to but we just, for the life of us, don't seem to identify where our weaknesses are and say, well, it'll be fine. And in that case, listen, we're very lucky that it turned out the way it was. It was just a touchdown and not a broken collarbone or something like that.
Well, and arguably that didn't cost them the game. They were well on their way to defeat by that point. But yeah, luckiest part of that play is that Aaron Rodgers wasn't seriously injured. So we aren't going to know the status of all of these walking wounded. They had 6 starters miss significant time. I guess it depends on what you think of Devon House, where they put him on the depth chart, but arguably a 7th starter who potentially is not going to play against the Bengals. The Bengals finally, after a nice little 5-year run that was probably their glory years, starting to look like the Bengals.
Like the Bengals again. The Bungles.
The Bungles, yeah. So it's a welcome return to that for, I guess, the rest of us in the NFL. So what are you expecting coming out of this game? I know everybody gets a little bit nervous when you see a loss like yesterday, but surely they're going to beat the Bengals.
Well, I hope so. Listen, I think the Daniels injury is a really big deal. Yeah. I mean, if you think about how tough he is, and then for him to be on the sidelines in a critical game against the NFC champions, you know, that's not a little hitch. You know, that's something that's more significant. I'm really, you know, if anyone's listening to these broadcasts, I'm super interested because it's got to be very close to the time where Montrevious Adams comes back and Vince Beagle. Remember, there's a Vince Beagle out there somewhere and a Montrevious Adams who was arguably, you know, 2 years ago would have been a first-round draft choice. I'm talking about Montrevious Adams. And so that's, you know, if you lose Daniels for a couple games, you've got to have him step in because if you don't, I'm not sure. Dial stepped in. He played pretty well, but he's not dominant. I mean, he's tall, but he's not dominant.
My concern with Adams is I can't remember procedurally what they did with him because if they put him on the IR to designate to return, I think he has to be out until like week 8.
So I think why do I want to say that I think they put Beagle on the pup, but they didn't. It was really confusing to me because Adams had the foot surgery, the same surgery that Beagle had after Beagle had it. But I don't think they put him on the pup. You know, we'll have to take a look.
But yeah, it would be nice to have. That's it. Just speaks to the depth again. It's, you know, you're challenging all of your depth here, and it's early in the season. You're playing somebody like the Bengals, but if you can't beat the Bengals with your backups, what kind of realistic shot do you have at a deep playoff run anyways? Because you're not going to have your preferred 22 in December and January.
No, that's true.
It doesn't happen to anybody.
This is the game in Green Bay where you run the ball. You know, we keep going back to that whole conversation. I think Ty Montgomery had 10 carries for 35 yards or something like that in that neighborhood. 3.5 yards isn't good enough, and 10 carries isn't good enough.
Granted, it got out of hand really fast, and McCarthy is one of the worst in a league that everybody abandons the run once you're down by 3.
Yeah, I think that's but you know, on the grass, the slower surface in Green Bay, you got to run the ball. I'm kind of really curious to see if Kevin King starts. Especially AJ if Devon
Green.
House is out, you know, that would very likely be the first start in a regular season game for King. And I'm telling you guys, keep an eye on him because he'll make some mistakes. But boy, his speed and his long arms and his height bails him out in an awful lot of things. I think we have a winner there to keep an eye on.
And there was a time very recently that AJ Green was like a Julio Jones level wide receiver.
Yes, so that's true. Yep, exactly.
That could be a heck of a matchup. Okay, so are you picking them to win?
Yeah, I think I think I'm going to say that their offense gets on track a little bit. I'm going to say 24-14 is Packer win.
I'm going to go with something like a 31-20. I think they'll be really comfortable. They'll do some nice things on offense. And they always give up the garbage touchdown to go over 20, which drives me nuts. There's something about 20. If you beat a team 31-20, it looks like a battle. If you beat someone 21-10, it looks like a blowout.
Right.
I don't understand
something
why.
About 11-point spread.
Yeah.
Well, and this 11-point spread, right? 34-23.
But 34-23, like you were saying before, it looks kind of close. Had they beat them 24-13, it looks like a domination.
It kind of does. I don't know why that is.
It's
either.
Something about that 20-point threshold that I can't quite figure out.
Well, what I want to see is I just want to see some adaptation. If they come out and run the exact same thing. See, I understand it after a win. You come out and you run the exact same thing because you beat Seattle and you think you're pretty cool. Now you lose with the exact same thing. Going into game 3, if you don't see some adjustments on offense and on defense, if you don't see more zone in the defensive backfield, if you don't see more running, if you don't see more screens and draws against Cincinnati, my fear is that you just have kind of headstrong people who are saying, we're right, and I don't care how many times we lose, we're right.
Because the offense didn't perform significantly better against Seattle. Granted, the opponent was better, but it's not like they were... the defense earned
17 points. You know, our defense is not good enough to make 17 points win very often.
Exactly. One thing I wanted to mention real quickly is that Aaron Rodgers has having kind of a slow start to the season. He's got an 88.8 passer rating, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Now, that's pretty low for Aaron Rodgers. However, he's got many slow starts through 2 games on record. And to make you feel a little bit better for all of our big-time historians here, his 4 best, the only time where he was above 100 after 2 games were, of course, 2011. He was king of the world that year. 2008, his first year when they went 6-10. 2013, when he was hurt and they went 8-7-1. And 2015, where the offense completely fell apart in the final 10 games. One of his worst years ever to start out was 2009, in which he had 30 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, and they had a top-5 offense. So
yeah, and let's make sure we congratulate Aaron Rodgers on his 300th touchdown, mm-hmm. which was a 1-yard shovel pass to there's that shovel pass, gosh
there
darn it, to Ty Montgomery. But faster mm-hmm. than any other quarterback by almost a full season. I think it was 13 games faster than anybody else. So listen, we get frustrated when Aaron Rodgers isn't all world every single week. Remember, there's somebody on the other side that's got to be catching it, and somebody's got to be blocking for him. But I hope you're enjoying this mm-hmm. because you guys are, you know, we are all really sharing something special here with Aaron Rodgers.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because tomorrow you should go to the Green and Gold Forever podcast page, which is Green Gold Forever. That's the number 4.
The number 4.
The number 4.podbean.com, where I'm going to go more in depth into not only Aaron Rodgers getting to 300 touchdown passes, but really what you just described, the Packers and how lucky we have been with quarterback play over the years. Some fun facts that I shared on Twitter, but that I found while researching for this. Aaron Rodgers, 300 touchdown passes since 2007. He had one in 2007. He's been a starter since 2008. His 300 touchdown passes are more, 4 more than the Houston Texans have had in the entirety of their franchise since 2002.
Oh my gosh.
Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers combined, that's eliminating the Jets years and the Vikings years, Brett's Packer years and Aaron Rodgers' Packer years combined have 2 fewer touchdown passes than Tampa Bay has in 41 seasons.
Oh my gosh, in 41 seasons.
In 41 seasons. So there's some of that fun stuff. It'll just be a very brief blog. So I find myself going down these statistical rabbit holes, and so I'm going to try to make Tuesday on the website the day where I just post any weird stats that are on my mind and let people react to them as they may. So if you want to comment or read that, you can go to the Podbean page. If you want to comment on anything we've talked about here or on any of the past articles or podcasts that we've had, you can do so in a number of places. You can do so on our Facebook page, Green and Gold Forever Podcast on Facebook. You can tweet at us at Green Gold Forever. Once again, Chris, that's the number 4.
So it'd be almost like Green and Gold Farve Ever.
Almost, but you know, we don't want to get too far. I was really worried when we first established this, it was only 2012, that people thought we were going to be Favre fanatics.
Okay, no.
And there was still some bad blood there, so it's...
Yeah, I got you. I'm just trying to give him a visual here to remember.
Yep,
use the number 4.
Well, we like Brett Favre again now.
Of course, it's all good.
We're okay now.
Time heals all wounds.
Absolutely. You can also, if you want to email us for any reason, you can do it greenandgoldpodcast@gmail.com. We have some older clips on YouTube. I'm going to try to start populating YouTube a little bit more, so Green Gold Forever on YouTube as well. But the main channels, Twitter and Facebook, is where you can get in contact with the show. And that's where you can share a what-if topic. And hopefully on Wednesday, we're going to have a short what-if episode. We had David Farillo, who shared what if Sterling Sharp had not gotten injured in 1994. So I'm going to do a really kind of quick look at that, because people forget about Sterling Sharp. Everybody thinks about the injury to him, but there's much more to that story, especially in 1994 in particular, where he held out the day before the season and demanded to be paid like one of the highest paid receiver in the NFL, or he was going to retire. So there was some big bad blood that potentially, injury or not, 1994 would have been Sterling Sharp's last year. So we're going to talk about that.
Holy cow. That's that's a what if that I don't think a lot of people have thought about, because you always remember the good and you forget the bad. But that was a pretty tense time.
Well, we had some bad yesterday. Hopefully we'll have some good against the Bengals on Sunday. Thank you so much, Chris, for joining us again.
Yeah, thank you. You can tell an awful lot about a team in the game after. they get beat by a better team. So let's see who shows up.
And if you get beat by the Cincinnati Bengals, then we're pushing the panic button big time.
I think so. We're going to be, it'll be a big red button with big sparkles around it. We won't be able to avoid it there.
Absolutely. So hopefully we won't have to do that, and we can join you next week with a talk of the Packers getting back on track. Enjoy your week. Take care, everyone.